Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ben Roy-Turner.
Hello there.
And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
We thought we'd do another What We've Been Playing style podcast, because for there's quite a swath of different things that we've been getting back to, from PS2 launch game Dark Cloud all the way through to every single last one of the God of Wars. Mr. Josh Brown's been playing through all of them. And then Ben Roy's been going back to Alien Isolation and a little bit of Horizon. So yeah. We're going to dive into stuff. But number one, the thing that Mr. JB Josh Brown was like, don't you dare start this podcast without mentioning it, was Call of Duty Warzone's Halloween update, which Mr. Josh Brown needs to tell the world about, apparently.
I do, man. Do you know why? It's because Call of Duty Warzone is like one of the best games of the year, period. No matter what happens, that's going to be...
Is that even classed as a game of 2020?
I think it's a game mode, yes. To be fair.
No, I would squash this right now so we have this as reference for when we do game of the year.
Oh,
it is a standalone experience, and it will be existing alongside the new Call of Duty. It's its own platform. It's got its own game modes. It exists entirely separate to Call of Duty Modern Warfare. It will continue to exist when that game dies.
But all those modes are also part of Modern Warfare, and it launched on Modern Warfare just because they siphoned it off.
Nope, I think if you download Warzone on its own, you still have Modern Warfare there. If you was to go into the store and say, yes, I want that, it wouldn't re-download anything. It just goes, there you go.
So how would you reconcile this? And again, we've completely transformed the podcast 1 minute in, but how would you reconcile this with the fact that it's also going to be on the menu screen for Black Ops Cold War? Does that make it also Black Ops Cold War? That doesn't make any sense, boys.
Wait a minute, because what about zombies when it's in Black Ops 1, then zombies is in Black Ops 2?
But they're different. They're different game engines. Yeah, exactly. They're different games.
Yeah. With Warzone,
that's our point, though.
Yeah. With Warzone, just it's all experience, and you could just launch it from Black Ops, as yes. You can launch it from Call of Duty Modern Warfare. It's its own separate thing, and you can't
just
access
the game
the
mode within a game.
It's completely different. It's that went through. I'm gonna be here championing it to the bitter end. It's not even what I want to talk about.
I support your right to say it. Carry on.
Please, someone support me down in the comments, please. They will. Anyway, but the new Halloween update is out for only Call of Duty Warzone and not Modern Warfare, and it is absolutely excellent, fellas, because you've got this zombies mode, which isn't just the regular old zombies from Black Ops. Like, it's integrated into the Battle Royale in such an interesting way, because when you die, if you don't get revived or called back, you come back as a zombie, then you get to play as a zombie, and if you kill two people, then you revive as a human, and you can continue this cycle over and over again, and the entire map is set at night. It's so tense, and it's so action-packed. It's so much fun, man. Like, didn't have to do this much to the game just for one Halloween one-off event, but they did, and it is just, it's one of those like nice surprises, like when Rainbow Six Siege did their kind of quarantine style mode, when they introduced like these monsters and this kind of strange little almost Left 4 Dead style mini narrative. Like, that was so far and beyond what they had to do, and I feel like this is the case here. I wish there was a quads mode, but it is very fun, very good, and it continues to prove while Call of Duty Warzone is an amazing game and potentially
amazing mode. One of it the sounds like a really good mode, mate. Is
one of the best modes of the year, yeah.
Top modes. How do you win in that if everyone's going around in a circle of zombie human, zombie human?
Because when you get killed as a zombie, then you have to be called back, either bought back by cash. Dead. So it's your team can be completely eliminated if you're all eliminated as zombies as well as humans. So it's not like people continue to come in. You just get more options to come back.
So there's no gulag. Do you go to the morgue or anything like that?
Is there still a gulag? No, there's no gulag. You just it's quite funny actually, because when you die, you respawn as a zombie, but you still like parachute in, but you have no parachute. So you
just fell. Yeah.
You do. You just free fall to the ground and you just slam on the ground and then pick yourself up and start shambling. But you've got like some cool moves, because you're not just like a regular shambler. You're very fast, you're very deadly, you're very agile. You've got this jump button that makes you jump like Spider-Man across the map, which is so sick. And it's just, it's
why is,
really
why
cool,
is nowhere near more people been talking about this? This standalone game that is in no way a mode. Why has this not been talked about more?
I think it's a bit like when PUBG had a mode. I think a mode earlier this year where you played as fairy tale things, where you ever played as a
What's
maid.
PUBG, mate? Who's playing that? That like Fortnite.
Loads of people actually play it on their mobile telephone devices. You know what a telephone is. Yeah, just you could play as a mage or was it a swords person or an archer, but you just had a crossbow. And that was a really weird, fun game where you kill someone, they explode in nice little sparkles. And
I like the idea that they're sort of branching out. That Spellbreak thing, I guess, sort of took that, like, has done that idea on a much bigger scale. But yeah, I guess when we come to the game of the year stuff, Josh, are you going to be flying the flag for old Jimmy Warzone?
I am, man, because, you know, I've tried so hard to get into Battle Royale games in the past, you know what I mean? I jumped into H1Z1, jumped into Fortnite, jumped into Apex Legends, jumped into PUBG very briefly, and I could never get into them, but this is the one that's finally hooked me, you know, like, in terms of the presentation, the size of the map, the feeling of firing those weapons. I mean, Modern Warfare revolutionized the Call of Duty kind of base game feel, you know what I mean? Like, the kick to these weapons is great, like, the sense of impact when you're in these engagements is awesome. The tweaks they've added, like the gulag, I think makes you more engaged in the game itself. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying it's the best battle royale game, but for me personally, what I want out of a battle royale game,
I think you
like,
have actually written that out to me in a text before. I think you have.
I have
on the best
because
one.
Me and you, Scott Tilford, Ben Roy is never going to be convinced because he's put like 1 million hours into PUBG, but
PUBG.
Me and you, I know we've always had conversations about like how we just can't get into it and how when we're playing, you know, like when they had Blackout in Call of Duty Black Ops, like we would just want to be playing regular Call of Duty instead. I finally don't get that feeling with Warzone, and I finally feel like I found my Battle Royale game, and I now have pumped in hundreds of hours into it, and I'm trying to catch up Ben Roy's PUBG hours.
It's weird because the gulag, I appreciate the gulag and things like that, but at one point it just feels like stabilized as well. Like I like, So something scary to me about dying and that's you're done. Like even if you like a lot recently when I jump in for like say 3 games on a weekend, like you just get ruined apart from like one game where it's good. And yeah, it does feel like time wasted. But yeah, like I love the gulag and also hate it at the same time. Like, can you play that game without the gulag? Is there a non-gulag option? Or is it always gulag all the time?
Yeah, it's gulag all the time. Sometimes, I think occasionally, very occasionally, they throw in a solos mode, like a special one-off mode where you don't have the gulag, but I don't think they've put that in for a few seasons now. Normally, they do lean on gulag or just the buyback option. If you have enough cash that you find around the world, then you could just buy back people who are dead.
But yeah, I will give this a shot after this recommendation. This sounds genuinely cool.
I'm tempted now. But I've just got to get my friends to find 100 gigs on their PS4s because none of them did what I did and upgraded their hard drive. So they both got 500 gig ones. So
I'll tell you what's actually insane though, Ben Roy. You wrote down your first game you want to talk about is Fallout 76. Explain
yes.
yourself.
Well, that wasn't the first. That wasn't the first game in my list. But
that's what I put at the top.
Yeah. Country Roads Are Taking Me Home, West Virginia. And I've been thinking about, what is it, Pip-Boy, is that his name?
Vault Boy?
Yeah, Vault Boy.
Mr. Pip-Boy.
Mr. Pips.
Man who loves the Fallout franchise, can't remember anything from it. And I've been wanting to return to Fallout in some way, and I'm not going back to 4 because I plan that, I don't want to do the DLCs. 3, I just destroyed, and New Vegas also did the same thing. And I was like, you know what, 76, Phil Spencer has gifted this to me. On Game Pass, why not
give
it
and he taketh away?
Why not delete everything else on that on my Xbox One, like a little game that what was you playing recently, Josh? Outer Wilds. You delete that, get rid of that, because we need to get Fallout 76 on this machine.
Imagine the reality of deleting Outer Wilds to play Fallout 76 as the last thing you play on that console this generation.
Don't worry, Gears 3 is still on there and Gears 5 is still on there. I think this is about
you got the essentials.
Yeah. But it's just nice. I needed another social game, as I've said before. Like, you always need a social game. And Josh's social game is it's a mode in a game, Warzone. mine turned out to be Fallout 76. It's just a nice experience to go around, you know. Finish, like, what do you do when you finish Gears Judgment in 2020? You've got to go to the next thing.
What do you do if you're playing Gears Judgment in 2020?
And 76 is just, you start off and people are actually really nice. Like, you come out of the vault and you're like, you're a little child, like, you're not a child, but you feel like a child because you can't do anything. Forget the fact that I had a bug where my UI didn't appear for that. I had to reset the game.
Massive bugs,
I was like,
brilliant.
I was like, what's going on here? I was like, oh, you just got reset. But loads of people just coming out of the trees, just like adult humans, like just like waving at me, dancing at me, and they're just dropping bags of stuff and just giving me all their loot, which obviously is really good for me, but obviously is nothing for them anymore. And it was nice to go into a game and like have these humans like do a little dance, give me
some
stuff.
I have to imagine, like, if you've been playing Fallout 76 this whole time, if you've been this dedicated to it, then there probably is a really good, like, strong community there that is assumedly very fun to get plugged into.
I'm not lying, there was like four people that just offered stuff to me and my friend, and then when we went off to do quests. Now I don't know if we're just wrong about this or we can't work it out, but some of the quests you can only, so if I go in and do the quest and kill the guy or human or whatever you want to call them, or
the pipsman,
superhuman sometimes, but it won't register for your partner and your group, so then they have to go and do that again. So that's a bit weird with certain things.
Oh, okay.
But for the most part, wandering the wasteland and coming across, like, say, a little settlement, shooting some things up or going into a cave, it's enjoyable, you know, just a time to chat, and then realize that maybe you should then, after about 2 hours, because it feels slow, it's like, that's relaxing, and then you just want to move.
Why have you not been on Ori and the Will of the Wisps, mate? Why?
Because that actually didn't get deleted, but
no, all good.
It's, but I'm not going to play that on this Xbox because, as I said before, my controller has forward drift. My controller always wants to go forward, and I did Ori and the Blind Forest.
Which is more suitable than Fallout.
I cannot play the second one with that, so that's why I'm waiting until the Series S, and I'm going to play it there.
Okay.
Roy,
yes.
Are you all right, mate? Because you're playing Fallout 76. With forward drift, and if that's not a cry for help, I don't know what it is. If not a cry for help, is
Game Pass games that are 10 Game Pass games that are a total cry for help. we'll whack that together at some point.
Yeah, it's just. I mean, it's not perfect. It's just a game that I play to talk with my friend, and like when we're not playing Gears 5, really, we literally need another game when we're not playing Gears 5, which is still not a lot. I've still played that game every week since launch.
I respect it, man, because I've had similar thoughts in the past because we got it for bloody at launch and I never properly booted it up. So I have it on my PlayStation. And being a Fallout fan, again, like you, I just want to exist in that world and I want to have the radio on and I want to be wandering around. And I often think that might be enough to get me to try it because, again, I've hammered New Vegas, hammered Fallout 3,
there's a story as well. Well, there's quests and shit. Quests and stuff.
I sent you an Xbox controller so you at least try a little bit of Ori, and he's not. He's going to install Fallout 76 instead of me. Here's the light, and here's you in the absolute darkness.
When you and your friends, like, you can play on your own, or you can bring your friends in. Like, you know, you can take a break from Warzone breaks, and like, you know, jump in there.
I'm not going to subject my friends to it, but I might do it on my own.
I think it's worth it. Like, you know, if you already own it, or if you already have Game Pass, then I'm never going to sell with someone to buy this game because I still don't know how broken fundamentally it is at certain points. But it's just actually more Fallout now they've put like the quest line and stuff in.
I mean, that's good. I'm glad they sort of brought enough back in that it justifies.
They made it a game.
Yeah, exactly. They made it a game. They sort of made it like worth people's time, because the only amount that I played was about half an hour on the midnight launch and was just like, yeah, this is completely broken. Like, got outside the vault, everyone was all stretched in weird positions. And I was like, this is not what I need in my life. But anyway, the next game down, which is one for me and Josh, but Benway, I know you've just installed it, is Hades. But oh, Mr. JB, you might have broken Hades by being too good at it.
Yeah, I'll take that compliment, Scott. I don't know. It's just that every time I really enjoyed Hades. Look, I've really enjoyed my time with it because I don't usually like roguelikes, but I've been really, you know, enjoying the combat and the flow and the repetition of this and getting through the levels. But yeah, I think we differ on how quickly we progress because I was jumping through the realms, you know, after
you did in like an afternoon what I did in like 2 weeks. Like it's yeah, insane yeah, how fast you got through it. Like you just burned through it.
And I haven't finished it yet. I'm still at, like, I got to the final boss. But I think that's also telling because I got to the final boss and that was like a week ago and I haven't even done a single run since. I've just kind of, I haven't felt the desire to go back because when it comes to like the progression in that game, for me, it's always been the bosses. I was talking to you about this the other day and that's kind of impacted my want to continue retrying and continue experimenting because it's not like I'm getting three rooms in, hitting a wall and thinking, man, how do I progress to the next room? My progression through it hasn't been incremental in that way. It's always been on a realm by realm basis. So it's been the end bosses of each. And I mean, I get to those end bosses and those three or four bosses, they're the only kind of barriers stopping me from progressing, so it's felt less satisfying to just constantly be hitting those walls.
Are you not getting so lost in the customization side of it though? Because there's like it feels endless setups for character builds. Like, are you not wanting to experiment with that stuff? Are you sticking to the same kind of weapons?
I'm using more or less the same few weapons. Like, I really enjoyed the trident thing. I quite like the final weapon that you unlock. Not to spoil anything for Benroy, but I feel like I've settled into a rhythm, and that's not the game's fault. I just do this quite often with games like Metal Gear Solid 5, where I know what works, and to do anything else almost seems a bit antithetical to why I want to play the game in the first place. Like, why would I experiment with this weapon I don't like using that might not get me far through the game when ultimately I'm just playing now to beat the end boss, and I want to maximize the kind of strengths that I've been doing well and sort of minimize the weaknesses. I don't know, it's a strange one because in a lot of ways it's impeccable. The art style's gorgeous, the characters are so fun. Like, the way it accounts for your runs through the game and what you've died to and what you're doing and what upgrades you're getting and stuff is really cool. It's just, I don't know. I've blasted through it in like 2 days, you know, like 10 hours of game time. And maybe it's because of the fact that I didn't have that immense uphill battle. I wasn't like smashing my head against, you know, room 3 in the second realm. Like, I need to get past this, need to get past this and getting the satisfaction of it. It's literally the bosses midway through that just kind of become a frustrating thing to go back to because I was only going back to it to have another go at the boss, and everything else in between felt like just filler to get to that moment.
That is definitely what the end game is. Because once you do a successful run, you need to do another 10 successful runs to be able to get the final thing. And so once you know what, you know, character build kind of works, it almost dissuades you from experimenting the same way that you were in the previous hours when you were just like, well, I'll try the bow for a bit, or I'll try the gun for a bit, or the spear or whatever. Once you know what a successful build is and you just want to chase the story, then you are literally just replaying that same half hour run chunk over and over again. And I've beaten it 4 times or 4 successful runs, and I've got like 60 runs overall. And I finally managed to, like, you know, get through stuff, see some story stuff. It's brilliant story stuff. But last night I got to final boss again on like the 5th potentially successful run and got killed with like a millimeter of the health left on the boss, and I was like, nah, I'm done. Like, I've done like 30 plus hours of it or whatever it is. I just want to see the story through, and I can't keep throwing myself at a half an hour gauntlet just to fail in the last 10 seconds to then do an entire half hour just to try that last bit again. And so I think that it can implode on itself because the story gets so good, especially after your first successful run. But it does mean that you're going to have to rerun, like I said, another half hour gauntlet. Or you can get that down, I guess, if you are like, you know, you want to spec in a certain direction or something. But for me, it's like, you know, the value proposition is just, it completely implodes at some point.
I haven't played the game yet, so I don't have much to add, but poaching off another very popular podcast, Triple Click, they mentioned that there was a difficulty option where you can make it easier for yourself.
Yeah, so that's weird. They do a thing called God Mode that you unlock after you beat, when you beat your first successful run, you'll get God Mode. That gives you incremental damage reduction, but you still have to die and you still have to lose your progress. So like, if you get to like I said, that final fight and you still die and you've ticked the box for God Mode, you'll then get a 20% damage reduction thing, but you're still going back to the start. And so like, if you then die again and again, you get 2% increments on like 22% damage reduction, 24, but you're still going back to the start, which like for me is the problem because I just don't have the time to keep redoing this thing.
That's a great point, actually, Scott, because that's what I feel right now. Now that I've got to the end sort of boss, I almost feel like I've learned everything in the game in all that I'm powering up, going back through. It's not knowledge of how enemies work. It's not knowledge of how the levels work. It's literally just so I can just get those incremental abilities up so I can increase how much health I have at the start of, you know, each round, how much damage my weapons does and stuff like that. It's like, I'm here for the story. I'm here for the experience. But at this point, am I just doing these runs to get those slight buffs to make that end boss a bit easier? That's kind of what it feels like. And it might be wrong, but it's so weird when you're outside of it. Because when I'm in it, I'm like, this is amazing. I only want to play this game. But as soon as I detach from it, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to invest back
in it. It's strange. I do think that they do an absolutely brilliant, genuinely forward-thinking, medium-elevating way of tackling narrative, by narrativizing power-ups, which is what they try to do in Transistor, Supergiant games, where, like, you know, if depending on which character build you had, it unlocked different parts of the backstory. And so if you want to actually know everything that's going on in Transistor, you had to try every weapon, had to try every loadout. And I love that. And in Hades' case, like, you have it where, you know, like, different power-ups are the gods themselves, so you're having different conversations. And that plays off on who likes each other and things like that. And like I said, that when you realize what's really going on, I guess, by the time you've beaten the first run and what you need to achieve and things like that, that story stuff is so good. And like they narrativize doing the runs, and even the weapons have souls in them that then relate to characters you've talked to be like, oh, I'm trying to make peace with a such and such. Why don't you use them next time and then bring that weapon to that person, and then that'll be a different thing. And like all that stuff is so good. But it's the time investment. It's the fact that you can lose half an hour trying to get somewhere, and then it's not real progression because the final end bit hasn't progressed. I think stuff like that is always going to kind of stick out. But still, the next game down, Mr. Josh Brown, you've played through all the God of Wars.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Apparently.
Yes. Which it's actually been really good playing all of the God of Wars, then going into Hades and having the same sort of mythology surrounding it. I feel like I've just been bathing in sort of Greek mythology. But yeah, I went back to play all the God of Wars because I hadn't played God of War 1 to 3 properly. And I wanted to replay God of War 2018 in time for the new consoles coming out because I loved it at the time. But I played it under some dodgy, not dodgy circumstances, but I wasn't in a very happy mood when I played it the first time. And I always felt like if I re-embraced it, you know, with a nice new TV or whatever, I'd be able to enjoy it. With
this week's TV. He's got a new one.
TV. With the added context of the backstory as well. So I went back and played those first three games and I enjoyed myself, but also feel a little bit like it was not worth going through them all to get more context because I could have just got the context off like a 5-minute YouTube video.
The thing you can't... Actually, well, first off, Benroy, did you play the original God of Wars back in the day?
I've always played them, yeah, with like friends, like passing controller, sort of go.
Okay.
It wasn't until this newest one, which I sat down and made it like my own experience.
Because when the thing you can't get and that can't be replicated is the feeling of playing through those games in the 2000s when the overall media sphere, the overall sort of mediascape was way more like, you know, post grunge in terms of like the attitude of video games was more blood and guts. Mortal Kombat was still being sort of refined. And like that whole mid 2000s period where you had like Rockstar were pushing the boundaries of what was acceptable and things like that. And God of War was just this big, overblown, anarchic, dumb thing where you were ripping dudes in half and, like, you know, he's screaming Athena as he's, like, tearing everybody asunder and everything. And then God of War 3, for me, was the tipping point where he's an absolute piece of S. And I got really sick of him because Kratos just became a one-dimensional rage face. And I was like, that sucks. And then when they then rewrote him in 2018 to be like, oh, he's remorseful about this stuff, he actually realizes that he was a complete, you know, piece of whatever, and he has redemption. You can't get that context, that literal, like, almost 20-year context in a YouTube video or even by replaying them, because I feel like you had to live those years as gaming was growing up, because that's what God of War, the new one, is very much addressing.
You do certainly get it to a certain extent. Like, I'm only in the opening hours of God of War 2018, but you still sort of, like, feel it. It's so funny because you go from God of War 3, which I actually really like. Like, playing them back-to-back, it was probably the one I had the most fun with, which might sound really bad, but I bloody loved everything about how tight God of War 3 felt.
Replay is the best of the original ones, I guess.
Do you think?
I'm just trying to...
Well, play is the best.
Yeah, play is the best. Because, like I said, I hated all the, the character stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, totally agree. But you go from that game where you're literally ending, sorry for any spoilers for this old game, but you're literally ending an entire, like, realm. You're taking it all down with you. You're murdering everything. You're becoming the ultimate rage monster. And to go from that to, like, the opening of God of War, like, at least I appreciated it so much more, like, the reservations in Kratos there, like, when he's talking to Atreus, and they're talking about, like, killing people for the first time, not just killing monsters. And that hits so much harder this time around with that context in mind, like, going from it, seeing that shift, like, it's so smart the way they do it. And I have, to be fair, appreciated God of War 2018 storytelling, or at least characterization, a little bit more after playing the others, which has been, it's kind of, like, made it worthwhile in a way, because I think what's so smart about it is that it contextualizes this character through, like, the actions that you're doing. Like, I don't think Kratos is a good character in those first three games. I would argue that he's actually one note throughout all of them, even one and two. I just thought he was an unrepentant asshole.
He's way worse
from one
three.
to two to three. He does certainly build that up in three, but I didn't think it was necessarily out of character. But even that said, like, I still think it's all worthwhile, because you do get that reflection in God of War 2018, and they more or less kind of managed to recontextualize all of those actions, who he was. And it's almost like when you're playing through 1 to 3 with the 2018 one in mind, it's almost like you're playing the mythologized version of that story. It's not, at least for me, it's not necessarily like I'm there doing those actions. I'm almost reliving the story of Kratos as a myth or a legend, rather than I am the actual person he was, which might sound weird, but I think that lends into how he sees himself in the 2018 game.
It's endless stuff for this, because for me, it's the fact that we did go through those games at the time. We all thought they were really cool. God of War was very much covered as, like, you know, the Sony mascot, like, especially with God of War 1 and 2. And then 3 was just so overblown. And then everyone was like, oh my God, it's too far. God of War Ascension was kind of forgettable. And I felt like the studio, Santa Monica and Corey Barlog, had to grow and mature. And there's so much, like, inbuilt sort of feelings of, like, maturity and going, like, oh my God, we used to think that this was really cool. And then, like, they wrote a game about that. And, like, God of, and I, like, Kratos at the beginning of the new one, where he looks down and he's got the bandages over his chains, and it's like he's healing from it, or he's obviously, like, taking them off eventually, and he's, like, realized what he used to be. There's just so much symbolism in there that I think is, like, real world maturity, you know, the gaming industry maturing type stuff. Benroy, what did you think, like, going from, I guess, the old God of Wars to the new one?
I didn't really like the older ones, to be fair. I thought they were just mindless, just sort of like, I got the same sort of feeling from them as I did Scorpion King on PS2.
Just, you know, that's kind of what they're going for.
Swinging around weapons and just killing sort of, like, interesting creatures at points. But yeah, I wasn't really ever a fan. Like, I never committed to purchasing them. I borrowed them off friends and things like that when you used to borrow games. But, like, with the 2018 one, I think I got it later. I think I got, like, it's weird because I was also in a weird place because I just moved up here at that point, I think, as well. And I just started culture, and I got it a bit late, and I played for it, and it was just kind of like saying just to fill up time. It went from saying to fill up time to saying that I started to really enjoy. But then I feel like when I got to a point, I just was then, like, plowing through it and never gave it its sort of due. And kind of like Josh, I am going to go back and replay it because I'm on this mad sort of, like, hunt for platinums now. I'm just, like, just feeding everything I've got. I've got more than 50% of that. I'm going to go back and get it. But this 2018 was almost my game of the year that year, but it was just Red Dead 2 for me, just took it at the end sort of thing. But yeah, God of War, with that single game, they've won me over they've won me over with the creator's character, and they've won me over that series, and it's a series that I cannot miss out or like not hesitate to buy straight away again now, unless they do something drastically crap. Like that game for me was such a turning point. And to me, like, you can have that, so it's sort of the illusions of the other games, but they don't even really exist to me. It's just that creators from that game were so powerful that I just enjoyed it.
I can't ever not have that like relationship to the old ones, but I'm fascinated by people who maybe either like played them a little bit like you, or like maybe Josh didn't play them initially. I remember when Ash went through the 2018 one, like she hadn't even played any of the original ones, and the new one still landed as like her favorite game of the generation or whatever, or one of her favorite games. And it's like that, because for me, the new God of War is for me the best game of the generation. Like, I'm looking forward to having those kind of debates and stuff, and especially what other people sort of hold up as the one game that exemplifies like the best stuff that this generation brought us. But for now, we should talk about Crash Bandicoot 4, because me and Mr. Josh Brown have been hoovering up some different costumes. But Benroy, you've taken a break. You've been putting the old 76 wedge in the middle of it.
I got that and Squadrons at the same time. And then I made the bad decision to play through Squadrons and get it done. And then I was kind of like, finished that. And then for some reason, I just fell back into I'm going to play the games from the past. And Crash Bandicoot is something on the other wayside. Not because I don't like it. Like, everything I played of it, I thought was great. And I got to a point where you get the second mask. And I sort of that felt like a natural point to take a break, because I did all of that in one sitting sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And from there, sometimes you just want to think, like, I want a Crash game, or I want something like with a more mature rating. That's why I've gone to these more like survival horror games I've been playing this month. Maybe because it's spooky month, maybe just because I wanted to play them, I don't know. Right. But like, for me, I was in the Crash and then I've sort of fallen out of it, but I want to get back. I will be getting back to it soon before the end of the year. Like, November's going to be sort of like the cleaning time where I'm going to be like, now I need to play Crash again. I want to and finish it, because again, what I played of it was so enjoyable at the start.
My thing with Crash is like, you need to be in the right kind of headspace for it. Like, it's going to be a lot of trial and error. It's going to be a lot of memorizing levels. Stuff that it's weird because like, the new one with Crash 4, they very much went back to how Crash 1 and 2 feel. Whereas like, for me, my favorite Crash was always 3, which is by far the nicest one. And the one that you can just play through the levels without having to memorize everything. And it's full of mini games and stuff like that. And growing up as a kid, yeah, I love that game. That's still my favorite one. But it was like kind of this weird like realization after the Insane trilogy that like, oh, Crash Bandicoot fans love Crash 2. Like, Josh, I think your favorite is Crash 2, or you love the old school feel of Crash. And Jules did too. And you're like mopping up the gems and the relics, stuff that I always kind of tread as like fundamentally separate. But then realizing that like Crash 4, when they were like, okay, how do we carry this forward, they didn't go down the Crash 3 route. They absolutely went down the Crash 1 and 2 route of like, you know, like I said, trial and error, like being very proficient with your, like, you know, scanning the environment, seeing where like different things can come from. And I had to get, once I got in that space and just divorced all of Crash 3, I adored Crash 4. But for the first, like my first playthrough through it before I was replaying levels, I was just getting so annoyed with it, because I was like, this is made to annoy me. And this is like, I just want to love you. I want to love you, Crash. Let me get through these levels.
I think that's why I sort of took a break as well, because I saw it destroying you inside through WhatsApp.
Very much like, externally as well.
I just don't want to go through that with Scott right now. I'm going to wait to see if he comes out the other side. And if he does, I'll go in. Whereas Josh was silently just taking this game and just go, I'm getting everything.
He was just methodically, I mean, because Josh, you finally got through it. You played on retro difficulty. And I don't know how much you've gone back and got other unlockables and stuff.
I've had to force myself to put it down to, because I wanted to get through Hades, I wanted to finish the God of Wars, because I'm doing something similar to Benroy, where I'm just trying to mop everything up before we transition to the next gen, because there's so much stuff dropping at the end of November.
Do you want to get Dark Cloud, mate? Do you want to mop up a bit of Dark Cloud? They've got platforms in that.
I don't want to do that.
What is that game?
I'll tell you about Dark Cloud in a second, mate. But
it's a Dark Cloud over this entire podcast.
The only Dark Cloud in 2020 is the one on my PlayStation 4. Don't worry about it. It's good.
Crash 4, though, which is what we're talking about right now. I finished that game, and similar to Benroy, I also had a slight break from it, because I played it that first weekend and then got distracted by other games, and I sort of had to force myself to go back to it, which is so weird because it is like such a lush experience. It's so fun to play, but you have to be in the Crash headspace. And I went back to finish the story. Thought I would just put it down then. I thought, right, okay, I'll compartmentalize that. I might come back in the future for the Platinum. then I was immediately restarting the game, going for the gems, going through the alternate versions of the levels and stuff, because it is so moorish and so kind of like addictive. And when you get in that zone and you get in the flow of it, there's nothing more than trying to get through the different versions of the level, trying to get all of the different, trying to find all of the different boxes, should I say. And it's just exactly what I want out of a Crash sequel in 2020. I kept saying to my girlfriend whenever she was around doing work or whatever, I kept saying, I wish I had this game when I was younger. And she kept saying, Josh, you did. It was called Crash Bandicoot 1 to 3. Yes. Like, yes, it's perfect. It's the perfect continuation.
And it works. Can I jump in for your story for a minute? Like, anyone who's watching, listening, Josh has got the platinum in all three of the Insane Trilogy crashes, right? That just maybe you just wish you had this when you were at university, where you could just, you know, like spend a day.
Sorry, what do you actually mean by that? You just, you wish you had it as a continuation from three earlier than 2020.
I just meant that if I had this when I was younger, like especially when I was into Crash when I was really young, like I would just literally live off it. I would get the 200% or what, 150%, 120% or whatever the hell it goes up to. I would do every single thing on it and just live off it, because it does feel so old school and like a perfect companion to those games. And sadly, now that I'm older, I don't have the time to, like Ben Roy said, platinum it, because when I platinumed the Insane Trilogy, like, dudes, like, I had a good time, but that was a grotesque couple of weeks, man.
I don't know,
like,
how, I can't do it. I hurt
my hands trying to do Crash 1. I just had to stop.
when Jules was like, oh, I'm going to get all the relics and all the gems for each one, like for Crash 1, and then I'm going to do Crash 2, all of that, then Crash 3. And I was like, what are you doing? Just play the nice one.
But it's funny though, Ben, because like I'm sure Jules would agree, like the relics and the boxes and getting those secrets, like that's such a huge fundamental part of the game or the enjoyment that we have with like those older games. So it's almost like if I don't do it, I'm missing out on a huge part of the experience that I personally want. But yeah, when I went for the platinum in the Insane Trilogy, like I was living in university at the time, and my bedroom was just like full of crisp packets. It just stunk of farts, man. Like it was awful. it was just body odor everywhere. It was like the worst.
Yes, I mean, some things have changed since then.
Yeah, some things, you know, sometimes I air the bedroom out, but you've got longer hair, like, twitch and go, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like I said, that getting into the headspace with them, like especially with Crash 4 was the first one where I really just sat down and went, okay, I'm thinking of Crash wrong. Like I need to, like, you know, like I said, discard Crash 3's mentality. And it's not like I didn't enjoy Crash 1 and 2 in the Insane Trilogy, but like getting in that mindset and like really figuring it out. I absolutely love Crash 4. I think it's so well put together. However, I'll tell you something else that's very well put together for the end of the show. Dark Cloud, did you, either of you, have any questions about Dark Cloud? Because I mentioned I was playing Dark Cloud, 2001's PS2 launch game, Dark Cloud, and both of you very much freaked out in the chat and said, what in the living, and you used some swear words. So I don't, do you not a fan of the old Dark Cloud?
Well, I've got a few questions. One, what is it? Two, why? Three, why is the little boy on the cover just Link? What's going on?
Well, okay, it is very much Ocarina on PlayStation. Like it is very, it's very much that. Thing is though, it was on sale on one of the PlayStation sales for like £3. And I was like, well, I can't not get that. I mean, what am I not going to buy something for £3? And I remember when I had the video cassette, the VHS tape of the original footage for the PlayStation 2 back in like 99, 2000, whenever they started showing that off. And I taped it off the TV and I had footage of Tekken Tag, FantaVision, Ridge Racer and Dark Cloud. And I never played Dark Cloud, but I always thought it looked amazing. And so just, you know, the stars aligned, like we're in the middle of a nothing month at the minute. And I saw it on the sale thing and I was like, I'm going to play Dark Cloud. I don't care. I've never done it. I've never played it. But that game is like an extremely basic RPG in a really lovely, charming kind of way. It's very PS2, you know, RPG. But the hook is you're rebuilding a town because this evil goblin or goblin man has like done some blasts from the sky to like tear up the ground and stuff. And he's scattered all the houses everywhere. So you need to go into the dungeon, get the houses back. And then when you're on the surface, you go in like a top down mode and you just rebuild your little village and you put like windmills, wind stuff and rivers and stuff and houses, and you just do little chores for people and you bring them back in. Do you not want to do that?
Sounds very wholesome.
It's really lovely. Honestly, the music's really nice. And the way that you open chests and all the house parts are in like orbs. Every time you open one of them, it's full on Ocarina like style camera work with like the burst of light coming out of it. Ben, are you going to get it, mate?
I've been playing Alien Isolation.
We haven't got that much time left, but if you can fit Alien Isolation into a few minutes, feel free.
Just going through that game again, just, I was looking at it, I need them another platinum after doing Resident Evil 7. Mm. And being chased by the Xenomorph, Nat, like the first time you see it, it drops down on the table. Oh my God, it's still so effective. And having the android, trying to get through sections, not being detected by androids, not killing anyone, not dying, finding all the collectibles. It was just sort of like a, as I'm clenching, going for it, like, I need to get that tag, the Xenomorphs there, sort of thing.
Isn't one of the platinum, isn't to get the platinum, don't you have to beat that game without dying?
Yeah, I did that, yeah. The thing is, though, the alien grabs you and you've got about 5 seconds to pause the game and just go load the save. Like, it's that sort of thing. And when there's one, but there's also a trophy for down 100 times. There's a point on one of the last missions. If you just Google it, it'd be fine. Mm. You save it there, you go out of the door. The Xenomorph always drops down, so just drop out. So just reload, drop out, and just die 100 times. That you can sort that out, fine. Don't worry.
These plat strats, I can't get on board with this.
It was such a great game to immerse myself in and go back through and play and then just tidy up and go, like, put it on my fake shelf. I'm like, you're now one of my platinum children. And then I went straight to Horizon, and then just the world is crushing in. But you were going to ask me about that game?
I was just going to say, in regards to platinum stuff, I saw Greg Miller posting about the way that the PS5 animates platinums and different trophies now. You might want to wait until you can do stuff on PlayStation 5.
I'm going to do God of War on PlayStation 5. I'm just going to clean Horizon up, then I'm going to do Crash, then I'm going to play Cyberpunk, and then Game of the Year stuff.
Dark Cloud in there at the end? Rebuild the Village.
Thanks for watching the Watch Again podcast. I've been the new host, Ben Roy Turner, joined by Josh Brown and Scott.
Yes, I've been Dark Cloud from What Culture Gaming, and hopefully you will too. For now, though, we'll catch you next time.
Bye. See you later. Don't play Dark Cloud.
Play Dark Cloud, mate.
Follow us on social media.
No, just play Dark Cloud.
Don't.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.